Welcome to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. Each weekday morning here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, my mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines. Then during our second hour, we engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number for those who would like to question, affirm, or just engage in discussion is 877-300-7645. Typically at this time I would jump right to the news, particularly news that is showing malfeasance in the world and comment on it, but there was a comment this morning about an airplane that ran off the runway in the south, and I thought I'd just change the mood a bit. For those who do not know, I am a pilot. I own and have owned airplanes really for the last 30 years, and have enjoyed flight. Originally, I used them for business. Now I just use them to make it more convenient to go visit my sons, which are various cities across the country. That particular airplane was a Premier One. It was manufactured by Hawker Beachjet. It is an airplane that I considered buying, but elected not to for two reasons. One is that in its design, its approach speeds are a little fast, and its braking system is not spectacular, and so it has had a tendency to run off runways, So it is not an airplane that is the best choice in terms of just pure risk management. The other issue was that this Beach Jet and Beach Hawker were in Chapter 11. The reason they were in Chapter is the ignoramus we have as President of the United States decided to begin his role as chief hypocrite when he gallivants all around the globe, goes to play golf with Tiger Woods, flying in Air Force One, but condemns businesses that use airplanes as a means to be more efficient. And so the general aviation manufacturers in America essentially cratered. Hawker Beach was among them. Yes, Scott.
Did he use the Air Force One to go on some campaign thing that was only like 100 miles away or 50 miles away or something like that?
Yeah, it's a good point. He used Air Force One to fly into from Washington to Charlottesville, Virginia. He wanted the reason he used Air Force One rather than driving. It's an hour and a half drive from Washington to Charlottesville. It's a it's about he could have easily taken a helicopter and saved the government all the money, but he flew Air Force One in because he looks more presidential when the when it makes the nightly news and he's walking down the ramp of the massive airplane. And so yes, just for a campaign junket in Charlottesville, Virginia, just 90-some miles south of Washington, D.C., he flew Air Force One. Well, but here was the same guy that, of course, condemned business for flying airplanes when they're going much greater distances.
It was GM that he did it to, wasn't it?
GM and Chrysler, both.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah, both. Yeah, when they came in to visit him, not recognizing that that the only way that really business can be effectively conducted is to maximize the people's time. That's what you're paying for in terms of your executive staff. Now, I've worked for years in business. And my businesses typically own airplanes. My use of the corporate airplane most typically was to, after a long day at work, go home and have dinner with my family, and then drive back to the airport at 10 o'clock at night, get aboard the aircraft, fly it across the country to some glamorous place like Bentonville, Arkansas, to meet with Walmart, and arrive there in time to take a shower, change my clothes, go to the series of meetings, and at the end of the day get back on the airplane and fly back home, arriving typically late that night. That is the kind of sacrifice that it takes if you're going to build a business, and airplanes make it possible to do so. But anyway, the President of the United States is a economic nincompoop, having never worked for a business in his life, much less run one, and didn't know that, and essentially killed American aviation's industry. And so when Beach Hawker was in bankruptcy, the natural and purchaser that could have salvaged the company was the Chinese aerospace industry, and they offered to buy it. And if they had done so, they would have kept the business in the United States and would have underpinned its full fleet. But the U.S. government, ever stupid, nixed the Chinese purchase of Beach Hawker, and so it is now out of bankruptcy, but with a series of just typical business investors who don't want to support the still ailing jet market, and so they have decided they're not going to support any of those jets that were purchased previously. So here's the premier one that crashed. Could well have been a Premier 1A. This is an airplane that 2 years ago, if you bought it, you would have paid $6.5 million for it. As I was looking at airplanes a year ago, it was available at about $1.9 million, probably could have been purchased for $1.8 million, same plane that someone paid $6.5 million for the year prior. And today that airplane has no value. It is literally worthless. You'll fly it until something breaks, which happens often in airplanes, and once something breaks, there's no one to fix it. This is just a small sliver into the nature of America's economic misery that happens when you have someone who is clueless at the helm of a country.
Well, we might have had two straight presidents now that are clueless at the helm of the presidency.
Well, why would you stop at two?
Well,
I mean, you're going to, okay, Bill Clinton was a reasonably smart guy in terms of he was a Rhodes Scholar. But what did that guy do that you would consider to be worthwhile, noble, useful, appropriate?
Well,
moral?
Then we got to start to condemn all of our presidents. They all have their flaws and stuff like that.
Well, we're beyond just flaws. I mean, Bill Clinton started to bomb the Serbs, who were the victims of the Muslims in World War II, with the Muslims and the Ustasis murdering 800,000 of them, and because he didn't like all the heat and attention that was put on him because he had sex with Monica Lewinsky in the White House, he decides to start a war against them. I mean, I want to go a little bit further than say that's a flaw.
Well, that's definitely yes.
Okay, George Bush, the King George II, starts a war in Iraq that leaves a million people dead based upon a lie, and he knew it was a lie at the time that there was no yellow cake uranium purchase by Saddam Hussein that was going to be the smoking gun. He knew for a fact it was a lie when he said it to the U.S. Congress and the State of the Union, justifying the invasion that left a million people dead. Going to go a little bit beyond flaw there.
Yeah, no, you're right. The flaw was the wrong word. Moral issue.
Moral decency? Yes.
excuse me. The whole thing is that I think this begins to show that politicians, they're no longer for the people. They're doing this for their own personal gain. And they get to do stuff that uses our money to do it.
Well, let's go back a little bit on that, Scott. The most acclaimed president, the most admired president, is arguably Abraham Lincoln. Now, you go back to Abraham Lincoln, he was a known racist. He wanted to, he was so anti-black that he said that there was no hope for blacks ever functioning in among whites, and that whites forever had to control and be above blacks. And he went so far as to wanting, yes, to isolate them so that they could not live in the proximity of whites. He wanted to deport them. And yet this man starts a war that leaves 650,000 Americans dead, and for absolutely no moral value whatsoever, and he's worshipped by the country.
Yeah, well, that all ties into what the myths that are projected by the people in power, because, you know, the first Gulf War, oh, Kuwait needs our help. that's how they pitched it to us.
Yeah, what's amazing, too, is that Kuwait, along with Saudi Arabia, were the two largest sources of fundamentalist Muslim jihadists, and they were the principal financial source for equipping the great jihad machine that became the terrorist machine that so plagued the world. And Saddam Hussein was a secularist. The emirs in Kuwait, as long with the royal family in Saudi Arabia, they're fundamentalist Muslims. We would have been much better off. The world would have been much better off with Saddam Hussein over those three countries, rather than the people that we turned them back over to.
My guess is that they were talking to us and Saddam wasn't. So that made him... That'd be my guess, is that Saddam wasn't willing to deal with us, and they were.
Au contraire. Saddam, at the time, was an American ally. We were supplying Saddam with his... weapons, with his intelligence. Saddam was an ally because the American State Department and military works on the Sun Tzu lack of morality principle of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And because we thought that Iran post Ayatollah was worse than any country on the planet, we treated Saddam Hussein as an American ally. We equipped him. You know, I mean, the whole of America's actions, it's just one bit of sleight of hand, one lie, one bit of just hocus pocus after another. It's just a sea of grotesque immorality. And yet Americans think that we are the most moral nation on Earth. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Good day.
Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're talking about just the kind of sea of lies that that swirl around the American governance, whether it be Congress or the White House. And Scott, during the break, was talking about how the media has become a co-conspirator in all of this, and it's really true. One of the most glaring examples was when Barack Obama and Romney were in the presidential debate, and Romney made a point that the President of the United States had knowingly and deliberately misled the American people regarding who perpetrated the murder of our ambassador in Libya. And which was a true statement. He absolutely did. He blamed it on a movie. He continued to blame it on a movie even a week after with his speech to the United Nations, when he knew the morning of the attack, in fact, contemporaneous with the attack, that the attack was being perpetrated by Ansar Sharia, which is a fundamentalist Islamic group that The name means Friends of Sharia Law. And so he knew the truth. He knew the truth contemporaneous with the event, and yet he and his administration, rather than blaming a fundamentalist Islamic group with killing the American ambassador, instead wanted to pin the blame on a Christian, calling the Christian an extremist and denouncing the Christian's movie portrayal of Muhammad, which had nothing to do with this. And so when Romney held the president accountable, the host of the debate actually sided with the president. Said, "Oh yeah, no, he did not do what you're claiming, Mr. Romney." And of course, once people did an actual investigation, they found out that Romney was telling the truth, and not only was the president lying, but the media was now lying in a debate, a national debate, on behalf of the president.
Well, the other thing that, and we talked about this during the break, is I find it weird that people know more about the future King of England and his wife being pregnant than as opposed to what's going on in Syria. I mean, one of those things drastically affects you, and one of those things, you know, has the potential to drastically affect you, and another one of those things has absolutely nothing to do with you, you know?
Absolutely. We're so fascinated by it. I think the example you used was I'm going to get the names wrong, but
Kim Kardashian.
There you go. Yes, I see. I wouldn't know either of them if they walked to my front door and bit me. Not interested in the lives of either of them, but you said that they are expecting childs too, and that's big news. I guess it's big news outside of my circles, but it is big news. And yet, how many Americans actually know that the President of the United States lied regarding almost everything he said during the State of the Union Address? There's almost nothing the President said during the State of the Union Address that was actually true.
Well, yeah. Another thing that goes on now with the media is that they're not actually researching their stories. They're trying to fill in holes without finding facts. And I've seen a lot of stories where, like, they completely destroy somebody, you know, based off of things that they heard without going into the facts.
And or they just don't understand the issues at all. One of the things that I came to realize is I was had some expertise in certain areas, and I don't claim to have expertise in every area, but there are some areas that I enjoy some reasonable expertise because I've spent the time to learn. And what I found is that when the media reports about something that I know a lot about, that about 80% of what they say is either misleading, irrelevant, or wrong. About 80% of what you read in the media, at least on things that I know a lot about, is either misleading, irrelevant, or wrong. And so if they're 80% wrong on their stories, on the things that I know about, would it be reasonable to assume on those things that perhaps I don't know as much about, that there if someone else was reading that story who was an expert in that area, that they would be 80% as wrong on those stories as well, and that the media is a wholly unreliable source of information?
Well, it's like we've talked about this before. The best lie you can tell is one that has just flecks of truth in it, you know.
Correct.
Just you know, little sprinkles of truth in it.
Right.
So that way, oh, well, he was telling the truth about this.
Right. It's how Pauline doctrine works at house. It's how Satan fooled Chawa in the Garden of Eden. You, in both cases, they take something that God said out of context. They misquote him, and they use the out-of-context misquotation to mislead. And that's how the media does it. You're not credible if you tell a bold-faced lie, but you are believable if you just twist the truth. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I noticed yesterday John McCain was blabbering about how the Democrats are 15 years ahead of the Republicans and the Democrats were so much better positioned than were the Republicans, and that his big point was that the Democrats had adapted where the Republicans had not adapted. And this is really the problem. It's about politicians being unwilling to stand upon principle, promoting the merits of their principles as opposed to adapting. Now, this was the issue of the Roman Catholic Church. Every time the Roman Catholic Church embraced a new community, rather than them saying, well, this is what we know to be true, and we want to share this good news with you, they just adapted to the other culture. And if you look at Roman Catholicism in South America, it is a wholesale blend of the pagan traditions of the Indian tribes and the Babylonian mix that has filtered into to a standard Roman Catholicism. It's you can do in Africa be a Roman Catholic and participate in voodoo. They simply adapt. If a group of people were celebrating the birth of the son of the sun on the winter solstice, well, why not incorporate that into our religion? We'll just call it Christmas. If they're celebrating Easter, which is a Sunday festival associated with the passing of the sun and the constellation Taurus, which is the where days and nights are equal length, and it's 9 months before the birth of the son of the sun. Let's call that today Easter, after Ishtar, the Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, and we'll call that day holy on our calendar as well. Let's just adapt. Well, that's the problem. You know, if you're going to be a leader of men, then you ought to have well-formed, well-thought-through principles. You must, you should then promote the merit of those principles and stand upon them. I mean, that's God's nature. God says, here are my principles. I'm going to promote the merit of my principles. I'm going to stand on my principles. I'm never going to change from my principles. You can either come to understand these principles and embrace them, or goodbye. I don't want anything to do with you. God didn't say, you know, man's become really into Satan and really into religion and really into politics, and maybe I should adapt and embrace those things.
It seems reasonable. The problem that I have is that right now there is a class warfare type thing that's projected, and it's being projected by our president. These guys, they have money, so, and you don't, so we need to get more money from them. And he's done the same thing that he's done with the rich people in the U.S. He's doing the same thing with the Republicans. It's, oh, if the Republicans want a deal, you know, it's things like that. And I've come around to your way of thinking that compromising not the way to go. You gotta, you know, be set on what you want. But it's all projected by the president. If you ask the average person, everything that we're in right now is the fault of the Republicans.
Oh yeah, they would, and not only that, it's the business has caused the problem, because business isn't paying their fair share, and because business is cheating the people, and that business conspired to put the country into a recession, when in fact it was government that conspired to put the country into recession. It was government interference with the free enterprise system that caused this recession, and businesses ought not be paying any tax, when in fact American businesses are taxed at the highest rate of any businesses in the world, which is why they are failing. It is just this soup of lies that, you know, that the problem in America, the reason we have a deficit, according to the president, is the rich are not paying their fair share, and yet the rich are paying 40 times more than are the average taxpayer, and most people don't pay any tax at all.
Well, why does it cost so much for our businesses to manufacture here, and it doesn't cost other countries around the world to send their stuff here? It doesn't cost them anything. China can send whatever they want here, and they don't pay as much as you would pay here.
Well, yeah, because the Bush, King George the Second, decided to make permanent the most favored nation status for China, so that Chinese imports would be taxed, dutied at a very low rate, when in fact the duties put on American goods into China are at a very high rate. It is the notion that they that everything that these folks do is actually disingenuous. It's counterproductive to America. And yet America continues to rally behind one party or the other and to elect one idiot after another, all leading the parade to our own demise.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing that nobody looks at. It's not just one party's fault. It's both of them. The whole government is flawed beyond belief.
But I think it's flawed because it can be flawed. It's flawed because the average American is ignorant and immoral and has been dumbed down by an education system that that makes being judgmental, exercising good judgment, a crime. And so Americans continue to rally around and support guys who have State of the Union addresses where everything they say is dishonest. And yet they cheer them. They applaud them, rather than hold them accountable. You know, we are responsible for the idiots that occupy the seats of government in this country. It's our fault.
Oh, well, definitely. Definitely.
You know, yesterday I was having a conversation with Tony, and he wanted to justify Paul's letters as being considered part of his Bible, because remember he wanted to say that that the Council of Nicaea codified the text of the Bible, and of course, you know, I held him accountable. I said, you know, that's just not true. That wasn't the purpose of the Council of Nicaea. There's a chat room that follows this program, and yesterday I was reading it. One of the things that was in it, it just helps to underscore the lack of understanding by people the world over. And I explained the actual purpose of the Council of Nicaea was to undermine Arian, who had a correct understanding of the relationship between Yahweh and Yahusha, which precluded the creation of a new religion. And yet the Roman Catholic Church, Constantine, wanted to establish an entirely new religion, so he had to disassociate Yahusha from Yahweh and to present Yahusha as the totality of God, so that all of the attention would be to the diminished manifestation as opposed to God himself. It is interesting, because one of the things that I forgot to say yesterday is that Constantine's representative at the Council of Nicaea was St. Nicholas. Yes, the fellow that we have modeled Santa Claus after. It was St. Nicholas. And the reason that that's important, St. Nicholas's job at the Council of Nicaea was to destroy Arian, was to make certain that Arian was labeled a heretic and that no one within the new Roman Catholic Church would support Arian's ideals, which were scriptural ideals. And so it is interesting, too, that not only did St. Nick prevail and that St. Nick became the Christian Santa Claus, which, by the way, is a word extraordinarily close to Satan. Same letters, just in a different order. Same kind of costume as we would imagine Satan in as well. That old St. Nick became the focus of one of Yahusha's letters, one of his open letters in Revelation. He is talking about there is some good, and he was talking to one of the assemblies. He says, you know, there's one of the things I like about you is that you haven't acquiesced to, you haven't bought into the teachings of the Nicolaitans. He's speaking of Constantine's representative, Nicholas, at the Council of Nicaea, which became the basis of the religion of Christianity in terms of this separation between Yahweh and Yahusha and misrepresentation of Yahusha as the totality of God. And so it is the same thing permeates everything we could talk about, whether it be religious myths, political myths, military myths, propaganda, patriotism. It is a lack of understanding, a lack of being willing to invest the time to investigate the evidence so that you understand and therefore can can form reasonable, appropriate conclusions, and so that you can exercise free will in a responsible way. This is the problem. And that's what we came back to yesterday, is that the problem in America is that we applaud a president when he lies. We applaud a president when he mismanages the economy, when he blames the only source of good in the economy, which is business, for the failure of the economy. And I think it even goes all the way to the point of the Torah itself, because the vast preponderance of people aren't willing to invest the time to observe what the Torah says, to examine it and to consider it, to focus on it so that they can learn what God is teaching. They're not able to understand who he is or what he's offering, and therefore they're easily misled. And to a large degree, we are all in this pickle, and I use we all by speaking of the preponderance of people around the world, that we are manipulated and oppressed and deceived because we are ignorant. It goes right back to Yahweh's statement in Hosea, He Saves, where God says, my people are destroyed because of their ignorance. And that is the purpose of this program. You know, we're here primarily to help our listeners understand so that they have enough evidence at their disposal that they can consider that evidence, make the necessary connections, come to understand what is happening, and then we share Yah's foundation, his perspective, his teaching, so that based upon that, we might be able to exercise free will in a responsible way, to choose God over man, to choose relationship over religion, to choose the truth over the lies. And it is each day that we get up and broadcast this program to encourage everyone to become observant, to shed their ignorance, to think, to come to understand, and then to respond in a moral and appropriate way, a reasonable and rational way. I'm Yana. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. Our number is 877-300-7645 if you'd like to engage in this discussion. Turning to a more normal theme here on the first hour of the show, Reuters reported yesterday that Syrians in leadership positions who may be responsible for war crimes have been identified, along with units accused of perpetrating them. The United Nations investigations have revealed. Now, what's interesting here is that both government forces and armed rebels are committing war crimes, including killings and torture, spreading terror amongst civilians. So the bottom line of the United Nations investigation is exactly as I have been trying to share it on this program for the last 6 months. The reality is that both sides are reprehensible. There isn't anything that you can say good about the rebels who are fundamentalist Muslim jihadists or the Assad regime. You've got two hideously immoral groups fighting one another. Now, that does not mean that one isn't worse than the other. In this particular case, as was the case with our invasion of Iraq, regime change will actually make the situation worse. And that is absolutely true, was true in Iraq, because we gave Iraq to Iran, but fundamentally changed the power fulcrum in the Islamic world, making the lives of so many people so much more miserable, and ultimately influencing the Magog assault on Israel. Now, as it relates to Syria, should the Mujahideen that are fighting the Assad regime using all forms of suicide bomb and tortures and kidnappings, should they prevail, the Christian population there will be annihilated. The Kurds, which have at least some modicum of protection, will lose it. They, too, will be annihilated. And Syria, which is an enemy of Israel, but at least a tempered enemy of Israel, an enemy of Israel that recognizes that open warfare against Israel is counterproductive, they will become like Egypt is now, particularly in the Sinai, a group of enraged Muslims wanting every opportunity to engage in jihad against Allah's enemies. And so this is a situation where both sides are reprehensible. We ought not be arming either side. We ought not be supporting either side. And yet the United States is supplying countless arms to the very Mujahideen that are actually worse than the Assad government. The investigators' latest report covering 6 months from mid-January was based on 445 interviews conducted abroad with victims and witnesses. They have not been allowed into Syria. Government forces and affiliated militias have committed extrajudicial executions breaching international human rights laws. And this constitutes murder according to the international justice system. They have done many things that could be considered war crimes. However, the rebel forces fighting to topple Assad in the protracted and increasingly sectarian, religious, this is a Sunni versus Shia conflict, have also committed war crimes, including murder, torture, hostage taking, kidnapping, and using children under the age of 15 as combatants. They continue to endanger the civilian population by positioning military objectives inside of civilian areas. The violations and abuses committed by the anti-government armed groups have reached the point where they will be accused of war crimes should they prevail. And the foreign fighters include many jihadists from Libya, Tunisia, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Iraq, and Egypt. Today, for example, a massive car bomb explosion in the Syrian capital of Damascus killed at least 53 people. The death toll may skyrocket to twice that when the deaths are all tallied. At least another 200 people have been mutilated. The perpetrators of the attack are the rebels. The bomb killed women and children, primarily. It was designed to blow up outside of the Ba'ath Party headquarters. The Ba'ath Party is the ruling party of Syria's Assad government. And yet, rather than killing those who are operatives in the Assad government, it killed women and children who were just walking by, perhaps as many as 100, mutilating 200 more. This is a war where there are no good sides, and I'm not even certain that there is the lesser of two evils. I am Yada. This has been Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there, and I'm going to give you a free copy.